Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2 p.m. Pacific Summer Time, and today being Friday, March 28th, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, if we have a review of what's been happening this week, then Europe has rallied rather impressively. At least part of the reason for that is because it's been led higher by the banking sector, but also because a number of the peripheral markets, not least Spain and Italy, it's worth highlighting also the outperformance of the Portuguese market. Well, they've been rallying. They remain on recovery trajectories. If one looks at the Euro stocks, the wider Euro stocks market, just those Eurozone countries, then the market's really been ranging for the last 3 years, and that index has broken out. It's been led higher by banks. Well, today you had the German inflation numbers come in below expectations. Well, the ECB has taken on an awful lot of additional duties in the last few years, but they do really only have one core mandate, and that is to control inflation. And while the Fed is toying with an inflation target, the Eurozone has an inflation target of about 2%. Well, it's been below that inflation target for quite a while now. So even though there are calls within a number of the creditor nations for a somewhat tighter monetary environment, the ECB is under absolutely no pressure to tighten monetary policy. If anything, it will be encouraged to loosen monetary policy in an effort to encourage inflation to get it back up towards the target level. Well, that's welcome news for the periphery, and not least the banking sector. The Italian banking sector in particular has been rallying rather impressively in here. But, as I say, coming from really quite low levels, generally speaking, and Spanish banks are also returning to positions of outperformance. Well, that banking sector has been going sideways for the last 3 months. If you were to look at it on a year-to-date basis, you would probably see that it is possibly down a bit on the year. But it is in the context of what is still a medium-term uptrend, and rallying back up towards the upper side of that range, it would suggest that we're going to see European banks breaking to the upside here. Well, in Wall Street, the S&P has been largely range-bound for much of the last couple of weeks at pretty elevated levels, and closing out the week at 1,857. The Nasdaq has underperformed a little bit in the last few days because it's been weighed on by some of the shares that were the most overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. And we've seen some pretty aggressive pullbacks in shares like Netflix and Tesla Motors and the biotech sector. Well, this is an object lesson in the difference between a logarithmic chart and an arithmetic chart. At Fuller Money, well, at Fuller Money and Fuller Tracy Money, what we've always looked at is arithmetic charts, because a log scale chart compresses data the higher the price goes, and it tends to distort an acceleration. And an acceleration is a trend ending signal, as we teach at the chart seminar. And I'm looking forward to holding the seminar at the end of next, well, in the middle and end of next week in London. But there is no doubting that a number of biotechnology shares have been accelerating on the upside, and that's perhaps, the iShares biotech ETF is a reasonable approximation of the sector. Well, that had been accelerating higher. It pulled back very sharply this week and last, and the speed of its decline has unwound the vast majority of its overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. Well, if you were looking at that on a log scale chart, what you would see is that this reversion to the mean is pretty similar size in size compared to reversions to the mean that we've seen in the last 3 or 4 years. And that judgment would be based on a percentage decline. Well, unleveraged investors and fund managers generally tend to look at log-scale charts because what they're interested in is percentage gains. Leveraged traders tend to look at arithmetic charts because they're interested in points moves. And, well, there's been an awful lot of points moved in the last 2 weeks because of how overextended the market had been. Well, that's going to set up two different, very different perspectives of what the potential of, for the market is at present. If one had a leveraged position and any kind of stop, well, then that would almost certainly have been triggered in the last week or two. So leveraged investors or leveraged traders are going to be a little bit more cautious about the sector generally. On the other hand, there'll be a sizable component of fund managers will be who have been sitting on the sideline and waiting for a pullback and looking at the region of the 200-day moving average and a similar sized reaction on a log scale basis as a buying opportunity. But because of the speed with which it has fallen and the fact that it's coming from a higher level and that the points reaction has been greater, it would suggest that some of these high-flying shares, and not just in the biotech sector but elsewhere, are due some consolidation at the very least, and that is assuming that they find support in the region of their 200-day moving averages. The best case scenario is probably that we're going to see some ranging in order to rebuild support before they can really sustain moves to additional new highs. Well, that's weighed on the Nasdaq somewhat, but when you look at the performance of some of the better performing indices such as the Nasdaq or the Russell 2000 or the IPO sector, well, they had all done so spectacularly well that they have been susceptible to some mean reversion. And we've certainly seen a little bit of ranging in here this week, which is at least helping to unwind some of the short-term overbought condition. Well, since this is the end of the first quarter, it probably is worth considering where we are in terms of market performance year to date. Well, the Dow Jones is down about 1.5%. The S&P 500 is up 0.5%, and the Nasdaq is up is down about 0.5%. And the Canadian market in U.S. dollar terms is up about 0.5%. But its nominal performance in Canadian dollars has been flattered by the weakness of the Canadian dollar. And the Canadian dollar, which has been reasonably firm over the last couple of weeks, was a bit weaker into the end of this week. It remains very much within the context of a medium-term decline. Well, Europe has fared a little bit better. The FTSE 100 is down a couple of percent so far this year, whereas the CAC is up a couple of percent and the DAX is reasonably unchanged, but the Italian index is up 13% and the Spanish index is up 4%. The Irish market, which had been quite overextended relative to the MA, has pulled back and also looks to be finding support, and it was among the best performing European markets last year and it remains on a recovery trajectory. So the most overextended markets are beginning to encounter resistance, and those that have been wallflowers are beginning to look a little bit more attractive, and that's certainly the case for much of Europe. Well, when we think about where we are in terms of governance, well, I've framed the conversations that we've had in terms of the big picture long-term audio over the last few weeks in terms of governance. Well, the USA has a declining deficit and some clear benefits in terms of technology and energy and innovation that are likely to see it through to a rosy future. But what would really be required is a realistic tackling of the unfunded liabilities, and that represents quite a significant threat. Well, the economy has been sustaining on a credit binge for much of the last decade, and the velocity of money remains on a downward trend. So the requirement for additional stimulus and very high levels of debt financing is still very much the case, and that has fed into the liquidity-fueled rally that's been in evidence for the last number of years, and not a great deal has happened just yet to change that. But when we start to look at where government bond yields are, then the 10-year yield is continuing to find support at progressively higher levels. It suggests that bonds are sells on rallies, Well, that's a very different scenario than we've had in the last 30 years, where bonds have been a buy on pullbacks. It suggests that the U.S. government is going to have to come through with growth in order to meet its liabilities. In the best case scenario, then the election result in 2 years' time will come through with a growth-oriented administration, rather than one that is focusing on social engineering. In the meantime, we continue to see that the Fed is moving towards tapering. That Janet Yellen this week told us that the first rise in interest rates will be in the first quarter of next year. So we remain within a very accommodative monetary environment, and it could take a number of years before we can consider that monetary policy has been normalized. It would suggest that any significant pullback in the stock market is likely to be limited to a reversion to the mean, and at a worst case scenario that we're going to see the market pull back to the upper side of the underlying 10-year trading range, which for the S&P is somewhere in the region of about 1550 to 1600 points, and that would represent a worst case scenario. Well, as we move towards the gradual normalization of monetary policy, the US dollar, which has been trending lower, trended lower all the way from about 2000 to 2008 and has been largely range-bound since, could begin to start firming up. We've certainly started to see it firming up against a number of emerging market currencies. The very consistent advance of emerging market currencies, which has been ongoing for a number of years, has broken down in the last 6 months, and that would suggest that with the inconsistency now of those trends, that the outlook for currencies is going to become more uncertain as we move forward, not least because the dollar has got some attractive qualities that have been largely absent for much of the last decade. Well, Europe has foisted fiscal consolidation upon the periphery, and there has been precious little acceptance of some debts that are unlikely to ever be paid back. It paints the ECB into a difficult corner, but what it does suggest is that we're going to have pretty accommodative interest rates for the foreseeable future in Europe, and that the recovery is gradually beginning to take hold, and not least along the periphery where we had seen such deep pullbacks. Well, there's the world of difference between talking about recovery and talking about really a big bull market. Getting back to a normal environment in terms of economic performance and getting back onto an aggressive growth trajectory are two very different things indeed. What we are generally seeing is an unwinding of some pretty dire forecasts for Europe. But what is also clear is that the euro is going to be with us for a long time, and that the countries that have continued to stay with it have generally benefited. Now, the fact that German inflation is coming in below expectations doesn't do very much for the competitive nature of the periphery versus the core. So that certainly remains a challenge, but the monetary environment still remains very, very accommodative. Yesterday I posted a number of charts for the countries that Morgan Stanley described as the Fragile Five back in November. And among those, you had Brazil. Well, Brazil was stronger today by an additional 0.25%, and that's on top of yesterday's 3.5%. The market is finding support at the lower side of its range, and it's being led higher by the banking sector. The currency, which had been trending lower for 3 years, has returned to an area of potential support. So, provided it continues to find support, the competitive improvement that the Brazilian economy will have enjoyed should translate into some better value in the stock market and some an appreciation in prices. Well, Mexico is in a very similar situation, and probably a better one in terms of its governance. You have a new administration there. They've pushed through a number of regulatory reforms, and not least the opening up of the domestic energy market. Well, that's likely to translate into pretty impressive economic growth for the next few years, and that should also translate into a higher value for the stock market. When you look at some of those other countries, then you have two elections coming up in both Indonesia and in India. Both countries have had issues with their current account deficits. Well, India has been running a current account deficit for what feels like forever, and it has largely depended on foreign currency flows to support the economy. Well, the deterioration in the value of the rupee last year, which bottomed out in August with the appointment of a new central bank governor, really started to scare foreign investors away from the market. But they have been returning, and the relative strength of the rupee, not least when you had some anxiety about the value of other currencies in the region, has really helped to support interest in the stock market, and the Nifty is breaking out to new all-time highs. Well, when one looks at the last 10 years, then the Indian market hit an important peak in 2008 and 2009 and retested that peak in 2011. And over the last 3 years has had this rounding characteristic, but within a very much ranging environment. And at the same time, that's in nominal terms, whereas in US dollar terms or in any other foreign currency, the performance of the market has been much worse. So people really lost faith. And the only thing that people were really listening to about India were some pretty awful stories about the role of women in society. So really what we're seeing is that India had really disappeared from the public consciousness, and that now it is starting to return to a position of relative and absolute outperformance, and that is something that is really worth appreciating. Well, there is certainly some of the good news is being priced in from people assuming that Mr. Modi is going to win the next election. Well, the market hasn't been particularly good at anticipating what election results are likely to affect election results are likely to have on the stock market. And there's certainly some good news being priced in at present. So we really look at the market, and from a realistic perspective, provided it continues to hold above the 200-day moving average, and provided that the rupee continues to hold stronger than about 64 to the dollar, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, there's also an important election occurring in Indonesia. The very popular governor of Jakarta has been nominated, and it's looking likely that he's going to win. Well, he doesn't have a great deal of experience on such a wide stage as the whole country, but he has a solid record for hands-on dealing with the issues that really trouble people in their daily lives. That could be construed as it is being construed by the market as very friendly and very positive from the perspective of investors. So the Indonesian rupiah has found support at the lower side of a more than 10-year range. It's also steadied up here, and provided those lows hold, well, then that should be generally positive for the stock market, provided the market gets the result of the election that it was looking for. Well, there's a presidential election this year in Turkey as well. So certainly 2014 is much more about the politics than 2013 was. Well, Mr. Erdogan is going to want to hold on to his position. And his administration has been plagued by corruption scandals. Well, Turkey is another country that is very dependent on foreign flows to support the government finances. And the weakness of the lira, where it went from 2 to 2.4 in the space of a few months, has forced the central bank to step in. And if one were to take the labels off the charts, then the lira is where the rupee was about 6 months ago. So the Turkish stock market, having pulled back by about 30% in the last year, found support in here this week and rallied rather impressively. Well, when you start to think about about the Fragile Five, then a considerable number of them have already experienced the currency market depreciation that people were worried about, and they have found support, and central banks have stepped in with pretty aggressive measures to support the respective currencies. Well, the stock markets are now beginning to take notice of that, and not least because competitiveness will be improved. I wonder whether it is still appropriate to refer to them as the Fragile Five. Well, South Africa is in a very similar situation, although it does have the benefit in the stock market that about 49% of the weighting is occupied by the affiliates of multinational companies, and that generally tends to shield the stock market from the travails of the domestic economy. Well, when we think about governance, it's hard to ignore what's happening in the rest of Asia. Well, following the Party Congress, the Chinese administration took the decision that it was going to allow the renminbi to deteriorate, or at least to weaken from what have historically been reasonably firm levels. During the appreciation of the last 10 years, it has unwound the entire 1994 depreciation. So when we think about where what we hear politicians talking about and the need for the renminbi to appreciate versus the US dollar, that's not what's happening at all. The Chinese are of the opinion that the currency is too strong, that their domestic manufacturing sector has taken quite a hit, and not least when a number of their regional rivals have been engaged in some currency devaluation. So the other major decision that was taken was that they're going to start to allow bankruptcies to take hold. Well, you can't put pressure on every aspect of the economy. If highly leveraged the companies are going to be allowed to go bust, then you need to have a counterbalance to that deterioration. And the weakness of the currency will help the manufacturing sector, which has been under such enormous pressure, and particularly in some of the hinterland areas where some of the greatest pressure on corporates is probably going to come. So the other development in the Chinese market that we had was that a regulatory change has been made so that preferred shares will now be part of the market. Well, that offers an opportunity for funding to the banking sector in particular that they hadn't had previously. So on the Hong Kong market, a number of the banks are rallying from the lower side of their respective ranges, and Bank of China in particular was firm this week. China Mobile, which has really accelerated lower in the last few weeks and has been deteriorating for nearly a year, rallied right quite spectacularly in here this week. And a number of these shares suggest that there is some short covering going on. In here today, the Hang Seng was up by an additional 1%, and it is also rallying from the lower side of its range. So what we're seeing in China is that some of the very dire predictions are not coming true, but that some more is going to be needed to really convince people that the low is in. What would seem clear is that even though there is a willingness to allow some of the smaller entities to go bust, that anything that's systemically important or is a very large employer is probably going to be rescued by the government. In Japan, well, the Japanese market underperformed for a long time. Then we had a new central bank governor and a new administration, and both were intent on breaking the cycle of deflation. Well, weakening the yen was a central focus of that, and the yen has weakened really quite a lot, about 30% in the last year. The pace of the depreciation has moderated, but the dollar continues to find support at progressively higher levels, and really a move below the 200-day moving average would be required to really question that trend. And the Nikkei has a very, very similar story. Now, the market has been firmer in here this week, not least because there's speculation that the administration are going to come through with some of the additional reforms that are required to start to solidify the recovery trajectory. And that would, people are assuming that that's going to happen after the fiscal year. Well, the fiscal year ends on the 31st of March. That's Monday. I posted a chart yesterday of the International Buyback Achievers ETF. Interestingly, well, European corporations don't really have a great respect for the equity market. Generally speaking, the European market is very much more bond-oriented. And as a result, even though interest rates are very low, European corporations haven't been particularly keen to buy back their shares. But Japanese have. Japanese equities represent the largest weighting in the international buyback achievers. Well, when one looks at the second section index and it has a price-to-book ratio of about 0.5, then it's not difficult to see why companies might be thinking about buying back their shares, and not least because we still have very accommodative monetary conditions in Japan. Certainly, if one can borrow at very low levels, then buying in the equity represents a sound investment decision from the perspective of a weighted average cost of capital. But that also helps to support the stock market more generally. So while buybacks may not be the kind of tailwind that they have been for the European market, it could certainly act as a tailwind for the Japanese market. Interestingly, this week, FANUC, which is a world leader in robotics, broke upwards, and it's been a pretty modest appreciation over the last couple of years, but that may be beginning to pick up pace in here. Well, when we look at the commodity complex and the fact that a number of the sectors that have been wallflowers over the last couple of years are beginning to attract investor interest, well, commodities certainly fit that bill. And the industrial metals continue to exhibit base formation characteristics. The gold miners have gotten right back down to their 2001 low relative to the gold price. Well, this week, the majority of the industrial metals were a little bit weaker, and the precious metals pulled back just about every day until today. Well, we had a pretty impressive advance in the first 2 months of the year, and the overbought condition has been unwound now. So it's getting back into an interesting level, not least for gold, where it's hovering here just below $1,300 and was up about $4 in here today. Palladium was up $15 in here today, having been down about $20 yesterday. So it's consolidating in a $50 range above the progression of lower rally highs. It would suggest that this is nothing more than a consolidation and that we are going to see additional upside here. The soft commodity complex has perhaps been the main driver behind the outperformance of the continuous commodity index over the last couple of months. The corn price is continuing to hover here below 500 cents, but while reasonably unchanged in here today, it has been firmer for much of the week, and nothing has really happened yet to question potential for a break above 500 cents and a resumption of the medium-term uptrend. Well, grain prices generally are firming up, and they were particularly weak last year, so we've had an about face there. Sugar prices have retraced almost their entire decline, and they're back up to test their recovery peaks. And coffee, having rallied from really quite depressed levels and then become overextended and unwound most of that overextension, have found at least short-term support. So when we think about the outlook for commodities, then they have been out in the cold for quite a while. And when you're 4 years into a bull market, people do start to think about what exactly is cheap out here. And if we are moving into a recovery environment where the U.S. economy can be expected to grow at about 2.5% a year, and that growth in the Eurozone is going to move from being a headwind for the global economy to being a tailwind, and if Japan comes through with additional reforms, then that could also turn into a tailwind for the wider economy. Well, if governments in much of the emerging markets have introduced reforms to steady their currencies, well, then that should also help to foster economic growth. So that could be generally positive for the commodity complex. And if that's the case, then there's a number of these instruments are still at really quite depressed levels. And the fact that we've had pullbacks over the last 3 weeks has made them brought them back to more attractive levels than they were when they were racing ahead. Well, when we think about the medium-term outlook, then there are a number of reasons to think that from the long-term perspective that one can be very optimistic, that we're in a demographic sweet spot for the global economy, that we're in a golden age of technological development, which is going to enhance productivity as we go forward, and that a number of the problems that we have had to endure with the high price of energy is likely to be resolved in the coming decade, not least because of unconventional oil and gas, new nuclear, and rapid innovation that we're getting in the solar sector. So when you look at the confluence of positive factors, then there's a great deal to be optimistic about. In the short term, we're in a bit more of an uncertain environment. We don't know what's going to happen with Russia and Europe. We don't know if there is going to be additional upward pressure on energy prices, which really would be a headwind. And, well, none of us has any experience with how a massive quantitative easing program can be unwound without any major ill effects. So there are certainly some issues facing us out there, but provided we continue to see that markets are finding support at progressively higher levels and holding above their 200-day moving averages, well then people will not have experienced a great deal of profit erosion. What would represent trend endings was an acceleration higher or a concerted loss of momentum. But as for the most part, we haven't really seen that yet. There are things to be worried about in the fact that government bonds yields are starting to move higher, that there's been a surge in IPOs, that the reliance on buybacks and availability of very cheap liquidity has been a major tailwind for the market, and that's not going to last forever. Those are all things that are potentially worries in terms of the consistency of the advance, but provided we continue to see these progressions of higher reaction lows, then there isn't going to be a lot of people worrying, and that suggests that there is, while there is potential for mean reversion, that generally speaking, people will continue to look on that as a buying opportunity. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.